Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm here with Josh today.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about virtue. And we can take this in general a little bit and we'll see where the discussion leads us. And so take it away, Josh.
Sure. So obviously the concept of virtue is very old. It stretches as far back as, you know, we've got written documents about things. So in ancient Egypt, for example, there was both a concept and a god named Maat, which was associated with the concept of truth, balance, order, law, morality, and justice. And the kind of antagonist to this kind of concept and god was Isfet, who was associated with chaos, lies, and injustice. And this is kind of an early conceptualization.
From the first kind of thing that you can say about it in history, it's something like, well, the good things are virtues.
Right. Yeah, they're trying to separate what traits about a person which have been personified in a god that people would like and the ones that they don't like. And they're putting a name to it, and sure, it's kind of a bit abstract, a bit metaphysical, but, you know, the translation still kind of keeps up all of the things that they've categorized here. You wouldn't say that truth, balance, order, morality, and justice are bad things, even though these were developed, you know, thousands of years ago. It's not really gone out of date.
So it would be something like a good characteristic that is kind of persistent or something like that, right?
Yeah, that would be more or less my definition of it. It's something that doesn't necessarily have to be widely conceptualized. You can just point to something that is a positive trait that someone possesses, and you can say, this is a virtue, this is what it is, this is what it looks like, and I think it is good, and that is all that needs to be said, really.
So then it's probably going to be interesting to look at what kind of they considered virtues in the ancient world or in history or over the course of history, and then what we might consider virtue now, or we here or other people today, right? So whether they say the same or not.
I mean, I haven't looked at that incredibly closely, but I was reading about that kind of history of virtue, and obviously the word comes from the Roman for, which is virtu, which is almost associated with manliness and things like that. Like, it was, you would describe someone who was a figure of like an aspirational or authoritative man as someone who was virtuous in ancient Rome, which is where it originates from, but I don't think it quite has that gendered connotation anymore.
So yeah, when you mentioned virtue, I'm going to get very autistic about that. Maybe a little bit later, because there is a bit of a difference between virtue and virtues, and it's kind of interesting, that kind of discussion, because I stumbled upon that a couple of years back, and so you can talk about it.
Yeah, it's only where the word comes. Obviously, it's a different conceptualization. The Roman understanding is slightly different than how we would understand it now, which isn't really much of a surprise. I mean, so much time has passed, and the culture is very different, obviously. I mean, don't need to tell you that, really. So most people's most detailed understanding of virtues comes from that of ancient Greece in Plato. In his book, The Republic, he proposed that there are four main virtues that are now referred to as the cardinal virtues, which were kind of adopted by Christianity after the fact, which he lists as prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance.
So why were they adopted by Christianity, even though they were kind of laid out by Plato before that?
I think it was through Thomas Aquinas. I don't know the exact history of it, but I know that these are things that are associated with that, but they were inherited from Plato.
Right.
I'm certainly no expert, so I don't want to speculate on that.
Because I know they are the four cardinal virtues in Christianity, right? But The history of Christianity that I know about is very patchy, so this is not something that I can talk about.
I'm sure Plato called them very different things than what I've just read out, but these are the four concepts, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But my main focus here is the kind of Aristotelian conception of virtue ethics and things like that. So the Aristotelian view is that a virtuous person is someone who has ideal character traits. It's pretty easily defined. It's obviously idealistic by nature. It's saying that these are things that we should aspire to, obviously. No one's really proposing that there is some kind of perfectly virtuous person in existence. I don't think there probably is. I think it's impossible to be as virtuous as humanly possible in an imperfect world, probably.
And so when you say character traits, ideal character traits, then that means it kind of evokes the idea that it is something immutable, right? Something that, that you're kind of born with, your trait, and then you kind of have that trait. But that's not exactly what you mean, I think. What you mean is something that you can kind of cultivate and you can foster, and something that can change over your life and you can develop in yourself.
Yeah. They generally viewed, the ancient Greeks, they viewed things like virtues as things that could be learnt and therefore taught. And it wasn't necessarily that it was something innate, although people may have be born with inclinations towards certain virtues and may adopt them more easily. A person who is not virtuous can be taught virtue in their view. And I agree with that, actually.
Like a blank slate theory.
Well, not necessarily. Like, you can still be born with inclinations that you overcome. Like a human man is probably born with an inclination towards violence, and yet I think the majority of people don't go around being violent in modern developed societies, thankfully. And, you know, although you're born with this inclination, you can overcome it through understanding that the virtues of other things.
But then you have the other school of people who say that people are born inherently non-violent and they're socialized into violence, and then they are partially re-socialized against violence, but not completely.
Explain that to the North Sentinelese. Like, has it been just the...
Well, aren't they socialized?
I mean,
because they are socialized, they have a culture.
Only with each other, but then you go far enough back when pretty much every single culture had violence as an accepted aspect. I mean, they're the kind of final relic of a primitive age. They're not socialized with the outside world, exactly. Which surely someone who would be proposing that argument would then follow up with, this is the problem with...
But that's not the point. Like, if you're born and you might not be predisposed towards violence, but then you're surrounded by an environment like a hunter-gatherer or prehistoric society environment where violence is necessary in order to survive and it's necessary in order to kind of advance you socially. So then you get socialized into it immediately in that kind of pre-civilizational era as well, right? So that's what I mean.
I think it denies the role of biology in priming you for these things. There are psychological elements that are too ingrained in our psyches to be able to lose them without the correct societal pressures.
And by the way, this is not what I think. I mean, I probably agree with you that we're predisposed towards violence and socialized out of it. But this, I was just making the case for the opposite side, because I know that there is a case like that, and it's a case that makes some kind of sense, even though I think your view is closer to what I think is true.
Thank you. So, back to Aristotle. He argued that our kind of distinct function, the thing that made us the most notable among other beings, was our capacity to reason. And therefore, he believed that a life that is worth living is one that is well reasoned. And although I may kind of be a bit iffy about, you know, our most distinct function is reasoning. I mean, there are plenty of people who exist without much reasoning, and I don't think their life is necessarily less fulfilling than mine. But it certainly doesn't hurt to to value reasoning as something that is important. Mm-hmm. And although I don't necessarily agree that it is our kind of purpose for being or our defining trait, it's certainly something that is worth discussing and worth mm-hmm. considering at the very least.
So I think why he insists on reason being kind of the key thing mm-hmm. for human life is that it kind of ties into the ethics that he has afterwards, right? So there's in ethics, there's kind of three main schools, utilitarianism, deontology, and virtue ethics, right? And virtue ethics is kind of the third kind of thing that is often pushed aside as something not very serious, but this is what we're talking about today. And so like we're considering it as serious because like mostly, and if I understand it correctly, how modern kind of intellectual discussion, philosophical discussion often goes is that it's a debate between deontology and utilitarianism. And so for those who don't know, utilitarianism is that you're supposed to do that which produces the best outcome, and deontology is you're supposed to do what your duty is. You're supposed to follow what you're supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. And then virtue ethics is a third category of it, which is you should do the good thing, basically. So then that's kind of a very, very crude outline mm-hmm. of the kind of intellectual space, but Aristotle would be mm-hmm. on the side of the virtue ethics. And because to be virtuous, you need to kind of act yourself and use your own capacities to kind of decide whether you're going to do the good thing or not. You need reason to be able to operate like that. And that's why reason is important, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a fair description of it. And this ties in quite nicely to something that I was going to move on to, in that the virtue ethicist tends to ask questions such as, how should I live? What makes a good life? What should be considered proper family and social values? These are questions that are tied to a virtue ethicist. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily exclusive to them, but things of their primary concern. And I think in looking at these sorts of questions, I think this is what people quite often want answers to when they come to philosophy with an interest in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it quite often
then
goes...
They get told that they need to follow the rules, then they need to follow their duties.
Yeah, and it's not exactly what people are looking for a lot of the time. And although that there's probably some value in listening to that, it's something that perhaps gets a bit too much emphasis because it's one of the dominant paradigms at the minute.
Of course, I can't make a good case for any of them. I'm not a philosopher, and I'm not very well mm-hmm. versed in these kind of discussions about the details mm-hmm. and merits of these categories. Yeah. But like I've got like my leanings from the outline that I know, but mm-hmm. there might be more to it than like, so if I'm making fun of it a little bit, then let's take that really with a grain of salt, because that might not be mm-hmm. the complete picture.
I mean, I do have formal philosophical training, but it's mainly in the philosophy of science, and of mm-hmm. course that's
it's very modern.
Yeah, it's a modern imposition. Most of it's, you know, 19th, 20th century mm-hmm. at the earliest. But it ties in relatively well because it makes you think about philosophy in a way that is useful here as well.
Right.
So my view is that we have some innate tendencies, we did touch on this a little bit, that are kind of relics of our evolutionary past that either need to be nurtured or suppressed as well. So this is something that I'm adding on top of the virtue ethics, but I think is relevant. So this isn't something mm-hmm. that was necessarily discussed too much. I'm not entirely certain, but you have things, traits that I think are good to nurture, such as your kind of maternal or paternal instincts. I think those are things that nature endows you with that are actually good things to carry on with, even though you're naturally predisposed. It wasn't your choice to have these instincts. They are still good things to foster and make sure you cultivate with care. And things that you might want to suppress is the tendency towards violence, as we touched on earlier, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's very unhelpful in a civilized society if someone, for example, says, oh, I don't like your sunglasses, then you punch them in the face. I think that is clearly not a virtuous act. It is clearly very disproportionate, and you should be able to take the criticism.
That depends on how ugly your sunglasses are.
What? So the uglier they are, then it's
the more,
more
is justified.
Okay.
Of course.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.